Hey, good evening. It's just 7 o'clock, so we'll start our village board meeting and welcome everyone to our regular scheduled board meeting here on January 26th. I'd ask the clerk if you could take the roll call, please.
Trustee Cascatello?
Here.
Bachner?
Here.
Trustee O'Connell?
Here.
Trustee Gillis?
Here.
Trustee Vasquez?
Here.
Trustee Brennan?
Here.
And President Aducey?
Here. But can I ask you to please stand to say the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks. Oh, staying warm. Yikes. Okay. Thanks, Seth. Okay. Okay. Well, we've got three regarding the Madison. So if you don't mind, we can wait for when that comes up. It's going to come up quickly. But Paul, if you want to take the podium.
Thank you.
Oh. Is the microphone on?
Yeah, can you press the microphone, Paul? I think.
Yeah, there it is.
Okay, go ahead.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Paul Harding. My wife and I live at 559 Ashland. What I did, I drafted some suggestions for consideration by the village leadership and village trustees. Regarding the ethics ordinance and their desire to enhance it. So I'm going to be very succinct. An issue that was encountered recently is that the ethics ordinance, it's written one way, and then the village attorney in three meetings, he interpreted it completely differently. And it just subverts the whole meaning of the ethics ordinance. And my suggestion is that the whatever you do with the ethics ordinance, it should be done clearly so that the average resident can read it and trust that that's what it means and that's what it's going to be followed. And then another suggestion that I have is that, I mean, obviously this is something that's important and that the village, my suggestion is that the village retain an attorney that's an expert on ethics ordinances so that it can be written clearly and that everybody can understand it. We just follow it and it'll just save everybody time and money. It's for the good of the village. It's best for the future of the village. And I would suggest that this person have expertise it with peer villages and ethics ordinances in peer villages. As Rebecca DeGroff pointed out in an exchange with the village attorney, that River Forest is seeking to be a leader in local government ethics and not appealing to or the least common denominator amongst villages shouldn't be what in ethics ordinances is not what River Forest is after. We've got higher standards and higher expectations. And that's what I've heard you say. And then ideally, this, as you consider it, it would be put on the website for comment and that the village leadership would consider comments by the residents. And I believe that with this process, that there'll be an enhancement. It's not that the thing needs to be rewritten. We don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. It just needs some enhancements. So thank you for consideration.
Thank you, Paul. Just let me speak to that. I think we all agree that we want to enhance it, just like you mentioned. And so that's kind of how I think we all ended the last conversation. And we need to do our due diligence. And that's what I think the staff is and the and our lawyers are going to look at. So that's our goal, and to share it with the Ethics Commission and have their input, of course, so that they have a chance to be part of it. So thank you for your letter. I appreciate it. Okay, so we'll wait with the other three speakers, unless Margie, did you want to speak? Oh, no, okay. So we will now go to the elected officials. So if I can ask, maybe we'll start with you, Bob, if you don't mind.
I have nothing tonight.
Okay, thank you. Megan?
I had the opportunity to go to both open houses that the village put on to talk about development. And I want to say thank you to the staff for putting those on. And thank you to everyone who came, who's offered comment, who's filled out the forms and commented on the website. It's very important that we receive your feedback. And I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Okay, thank you, Megan. Katie?
I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. As we begin, we acknowledge and are mindful that we are holding these meetings on the traditional homelands of and that were once inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place where many people of diverse backgrounds live and gather. And like Megan, I was able to attend one of the open houses this past weekend, and I thought it was really well organized. So I appreciate everyone who was involved in putting that on. I was able to interact with some residents who were there. And in my opinion, there were a lot of fruitful conversations, interesting suggestions, and responsiveness from all of the other parties. So I thought that it was really well worth it. And I'm glad that we're going to do one more, considering that the weather was so bad when we had the other two. Thanks.
Thanks, Katie. Rosa?
I have nothing to add.
Hi, Rosa.
Okay. Good evening, everyone, despite the unusual freezing weather. But I also want to echo the other trustees' appreciation and thanks for our village staff for putting out all the notices out. U.S. mail, emails, on the newsletters, website postings regarding this Madison project, which is very important for everybody. I'm also happy the two open houses were held. I'm saddened that it was in bad weather, but it wasn't intended by us. And I'm also appreciative that there's another hearing open house that's going to be coming up. So thank you. Also thank 531 Partners for coming out and agreeing to do that extra open house. And I know you're going to be coming to board meetings, not just today, in the future. You made that commitment, so I appreciate that, because I know we want to be as transparent as possible to our residents. So we thank you for that. And of course, we thank all of our residents and community, because we do welcome your feedback on this project. We want to make sure that everyone, as much as everyone, can get information from the very beginning, because we want to hear from you throughout this process and not wait till we get to the end of it, which sometimes happens. But I'm looking forward to going through this with everyone here, including the community and our residents. So thank you for that.
Thanks, Russ. Lisa?
Okay, just to round that out, because I just want to make sure that we have in the meeting minutes that that third open house will be Thursday, February 5th from 6 to 8 p.m. here.
Correct.
Okay, and then I also, given the cold weather that we all spoke of, I just want to remind everybody of the senior snow removal program. We've had a more snow than in the past, and for those that need help, there is help from the village. And also, I would go a step further and say, if you do have folks that live, you know, near you who are elderly, to check in on them to make sure that, you know, kind of the heat's on and things are going. Like, for example, at my house, I have a pilot light that goes out on a regular basis. It needs to be replaced. Unfortunately, my husband's out of town, so I'm waiting for him to come back because he does that kind of work. So I know how to turn it back on. But if, you know, folks don't, it is helpful that, you know, we all help each other. Thanks.
Thank you, Lisa. Erica?
Thanks.
Thanks. Yes, just want to relay again. Thank you to everybody for coming out to the open houses for the development at Madison. And hoping that people can attend on the 5th, and hopefully we're pushing that out in all the different social medias and all the different ways that we can. This third one, is this because the other couple ones were during inclement weather, or had we already planned this?
We were discussing doing a third one, but that kind of pushed it over the edge.
Okay, great. And I'm sure that we'll, as we talk about what we're going to see tonight, maybe also going through timing to show why it's important for that to happen now, and then, you know, what would be considerations along the way. In terms of the cold weather, please check on your elderly neighbors, but check on all your neighbors, because you just never know when someone's power is out or something. A good reminder that we have warming centers. I think the library is a warming center. Do you know, Matt, what are other warming centers in our village?
I do not off the top. I know that there is one.
The Civic Center.
The Civic Center
is another one. But those are places that you can go if you don't have power or your heat is out. And the courthouses would be another place. Thanks for that, Jessica. Continue to make sure your community is staying safe and warm during this time.
Yep. Thanks, Erica. Okay, not to belabor the point, but I just want to thank the trustees and everyone who spoke about the process, because I think all of you and myself and the clerk and the administration takes this process extremely serious. And we've been going through it for a period of time. So it's much appreciated, the support and the comments. So I have nothing else to add. So I'd like to go on to our consent agenda, if we can. If I can get a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda A through G.
Motion to approve consent agenda items A through G.
Second.
Okay, very good. Okay, any comments or questions or anything? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to read out loud each item and then take the vote.
Item 5A, Village Board of Trustees meeting minutes, January 12th, 2026. B, Village Board of Trustees executive session meeting minutes, January 12th, 2026. C, Administration Department report. D, Financial report, December 2025. E, Award of Bond Issuance Ordinance. F, Award of Contract 2026 Street Improvement Program, Schroeder Asphalt Services, $515,000. G, Approval of Motor Fuel Tax Resolution 2026 Maintenance of Streets and Highways Resolution. Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Cascatello.
Yes.
Okay, we'll move on to our new business, which is the introduction of the plan development at 7620 Madison Street. This is 531 Partners LLC that are here tonight and will present. But before we go into their presentations, I'll ask those citizens that want to speak now. So Corey, if you can come to the podium.
Hi, I'm Corey Gimbel. I live at 7575 Lake, overlooking Lake and Lathrop. I went to the open house and looked at all the pictures and heard all the things they said. And I was shocked to discover that they're planning 72 units on this footprint. When we rejected 40 that Mr. Housefield was talking about before. I don't understand how it's gotten so big. I mean, I can understand the economics from the perspective of the developer, but not from the perspective of the village. I'd like to basically say that we need to do more work. This isn't enough. If this was what JLL got us for $100,000, they need to carry on.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Corey. Angie?
Hi there. I'm Angie Grover. I live at 7617 Vine Street with my two young boys and my husband. I'm going to read a little bit of this so I can keep it concise. I've already submitted written comments, but I did attend one of the open houses. So first of all, thank you very much. They were very well prepared. And I'm really glad that we were able to have them and have another one so more people can weigh in. Prior to attending the open house, I submitted some comments. So what I wanted to just raise here are some things that I learned while I was at the open house. So first, I had the opportunity to speak with Matt and Jack and Victor, and I think it was Charles from 531, as well as I think they're also part of V3 development group. And so my comments are really to highlight those conversations that I had. So the two things I'm going to raise are building height. So in 2023, when we were last here discussing the TIF and in your listening sessions, I think it was pretty clear that a five-story building was not what the residents wanted. And it was suggested that anything less than that would financially not be feasible. Yet when I was at the open house, a lot of the discussions were pointing to the four-story building across the street, the one on Forest Park side, and it seems to be financially viable. So I'm just curious why we're choosing to put 87 parking spots and 72 units on a block that only has 60 residents right now. So it seems like going more than 100% in terms of capacity is not a neutral change. From business to residential is fine, but inappropriate size. And then the second one, and the most important one to me, is traffic. So I spent most of my time at the open house trying to understand the proposals. And Matt, you were very generous with your time. I really do think an independent traffic study that's very holistic is required. Jack told me about all the work that is being done in Washington, and I walk by there a lot, so I understand that. But it's a really awkward place, and people already use the alley as a cut through. And the way that lights are at Displains and Jackson make those two Lathrop and Ashland intersections really impossible. And so I want to make sure I talked to Charles a bit about this, and he was giving some good suggestions, but there were things like a three-way stop on Madison, a longer bump out, maybe cameras on the alley to create some ticketing opportunities. But I have kids that ride their bikes around the block. We use the alley. We play basketball in the alley. So these are not things that make me feel very good about how we're considering the traffic in that area for safety concerns primarily. So I think what I would like to suggest is that independent study, as well as some alley operations and management plans that not only address volumes, but things that residential development brings, like ride hailing and deliveries and guests, as well as commercial, if we can get somebody to even take that commercial space. And that would mean, you know, even things like raised crossings, speed controls, and something that could be monitored and people could be held accountable post development. So I submitted additional comments, and I'll simply note that this is not a neutral change. And I hope that we will continue to have a very transparent process where everything is noticed so that we can all attend and weigh in, and that we will find a path forward that will really be able to find some development that respects the neighborhood and all of the families that have chosen to live there. I live there because it's walkable. I love my neighbors and I love my neighborhood. And I just want everyone to understand the impact of something of that size and scale will have on our neighborhood. So with that, I thank you for taking all these comments into consideration and for your time tonight.
Thank you. Thank you, Angie. And Susan?
Hi, I'm Susan Altier. I live at 12 Ashland Avenue, which is directly across the street from the proposed parking lot and kitty corner from the building. And, you know, first of all, thank you for the open houses. I got a chance to talk to both Victor and, Sorry, what is your first name?
Chuck.
Chuck. Chuck. Thank you, Charles. Yeah. And, you know, appreciated that opportunity. And I know that we're at the very beginning of this process. I've been through a lot of these processes with the village over the years. And so I know it's evolving. And so I really wanted to just take the opportunity tonight just to kind of state some of the points that I did submit via the form and sent to the village board tonight, but just really wanted the opportunity for everyone here, everyone listening and residents to hear some of the thoughts, because I think when they're said out loud, sometimes it spurs thoughts from others. I'm just going to say that I'm not expecting answers tonight, but just wanted to share questions I have. So will we as the public see more details about the economic viability review of 531 Partners and of their proposed project? What was specifically reviewed? What were the findings by Ryan LLC? Who at Ryan LLC conducted the analysis? And is there any relationship between those individuals at Ryan LLC and any principals, managers, investors in the 531 Partners LLC, or the Village of River Forest Administration, Village President, Board of Trustees members, or any appointed members of the Economic Development Commission or Development Review Board? Would just love to be able to see more details for transparency. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is, will you be sharing more information with the public about 531 Partners LLC? And that may very well come tonight. From my research using the Illinois Secretary of State Business Registry, because it's really hard to find any information about 531 Partners, so I turned to that. I see that 531 Partners, and I've got the file ID for it, but that's not important for this, has a main address of 5205 North Bernard. The manager is listed as Stark Holdings LLC. That's a different file number, where Charles Westfall is listed as the manager at that same address. And the agent listed for both is Donna Hyde at 1801 North Bissell. Mr. Westfall is listed in the database as the manager of 65 LLC entities, which do not seem to include any of the 85 LLCs for which Victor is listed as in the database as the manager. And the letterhead that was used by Victor to submit the proposal to the Village of River Forest shows 531 Partners LLC with 531 in numerals rather than words, which I didn't see anywhere, and with the 1801 North Bissell number 1 Chicago address affiliated with Donna Hyde, who is the agent listed for Mr. Westfall's LLC entities. What I'm not finding online is anything that officially legally connects Mr. Victor and Charles, or I'm sorry, that officially connects Victor with the legal entity of 531 Partners LLC. And considering what our village has been through with the Lake and Lathrop development debacle, the lack of these details and only Victor's name and signature on the application with no mention of Stark Holdings LLC, Mr. Westfall, Ms. Hyde, or any other partners or investors is very troubling to me. So will disclosure of these individuals and their legal relationships be enforced via number one on the application that they filled out that requires names and addresses of the applicant and all persons having an ownership or beneficial interest in the subject property and proposed development for which the applicant did not request a waiver? All right. Promise, I'm almost done. For number 13 on that same application, regarding all of the economic viability requirements, only one of the no boxes was filled in, and there were three of them. So just, you know, do all three of the boxes need to be filled in by the applicant to ensure that all three of the requirements are met as a part of their formal project review? And finally, like many other neighbors, including the one who spoke tonight, I have concerns about density, traffic congestion, and parking, especially on Ashland, that are bound to come from a development with 72 units, many of which are 2 to 3 and some noted as 4-bedroom units. And I did ask those questions on Thursday night and got some responses that I just wanted to share. So Mr. Westfall mentioned that they have the capability to install lifts for the indoor parking spots so that 2 cars can use 1 spot. And Victor mentioned that the designated parking spots for residents of the building will require that cars in those spots have a permanent building resident parking sticker in addition to the Village of River Forest registration sticker on the windshield. And that made me feel a little bit better because it could prevent those residents from letting their guests or visitors use their designated parking spot while they street park on Ashland, since they're River Forest residents and would be able to do so. So I just wanted to make sure that those details are documented in the formal project proposal. So, and just one other comment in regards to traffic. I work out of my home a lot of the days and basically sit in the front window. And we have a lot of accidents that happen based on the traffic coming through that alley already. So my car was involved in a hit and run right in front of my house. My brother-in-law's car was totaled across the street, not a hit and run, but, you know, parked, hit by a car. There was a hit and run in front of my neighbor's, across the street from my house last week by a FedEx driver. And there have been other accidents there. So the congestion right there where the main entry would be into the development, you know, definitely is something that needs to be carefully looked at in traffic studies. So thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Do you want me to turn this off?
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. Sure.
Thank you. Margie Seconda, River Oaks Drive. I'll be brief. The timeline is very quick. This kicks off tonight the plan development application, which was signed the 19th, Martin Luther King holiday. And we haven't had the last of the open houses. There's missing information. There was no north elevation or east elevation in the packet from the 14th. I've met with some realtors recently at a memorial, and there's pent up demand for condominiums, bigger condominiums than the units in these rentals. That's kind of what the market and residents are asking for. I find it hard to believe that after Mr. Houseel released a 46-unit multi-story building several years ago, that this project, which is quite tall, quite dense, rental, that it got through the EDC staff, village president, the trustees, and it's gotten this far, and residents have had no information until the 14th. And the open houses to follow. So I think you have a rush timetable and not much information, and you don't have participation from residents to date. The village bought the land on the three parcels and owns it. The TIF owes the village at purchase price $1.8 million rounded. That's appreciated. That's probably closing in on $3 million bucks. Does the village plan to give that property to the developer? Residents would like to know. We need to know. We should know. And what about zoning variances? Because the project requires a number of zoning variances. Many of us don't know the full process. Does it go before the ZBA for zoning variance approval, or is it all going to be done in plan development review? Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Margie. Okay. Okay, that concludes the comments from the citizens. So so at this time, I'll give it over to you and then to Victor.
Okay. All right. Good evening, everyone. I want to start out this item by just providing some context on what the purpose of tonight's introduction is and explain what the next steps are. And hopefully that will address some of the questions that came up tonight. So tonight is the Village Board of Trustee introduction. That's the real first formal step within the plan development process. Tonight, there will be no board action taken. The purpose is just to give an opportunity to the applicant, the developer, to introduce the project concept, to kind of kick off the conversation and then begin the plan development process, which will include several public hearings, several public notices, and even more opportunities for public input. Now, the reason that the open houses were held, and thank you for those that attended, was to try and get input as much as possible at the beginning of the process. And trustees made the comments that that's important now because it helps kind of guide the developer and the village in working toward completing what will be the plan development application. And the plan development application is the substantive document that will be hundreds of pages that will spell out the site plans, traffic study that will be performed by a independent engineer from the developer that will analyze what the trip generation and expected traffic flows are and make recommendations on methods to mitigate those concerns. There's an environmental study, landscape plan. There's a lot of information, economic analysis. And there's a couple subpoints to that, to the question there. The developer will not be requesting a waiver of any of those items on the economic analysis. There's some subpoints there. That's why the only one box was checked on the number 13. And the feedback, we've already gotten a lot of feedback. Over 50 folks have filled out the online form. As mentioned tonight, we had over 60 individuals attend the two open houses. We look forward to getting more of those. It's raised some great questions for us, some that I believe Victor and Chuck will be able to address tonight. But a lot of those will be addressed throughout the process as the designs get more detailed and the plan development application in its entirety is completed. There will be no public hearings with the Development Review Board or the Village Board until that application is deemed complete by the village staff. There was a question about what the review process is on in terms of variations. This is a plan development application. All requests for variations or site development allowances, which are the same item, will all be reviewed by the Development Review Board and later the Village Board. So this project will not be going to the Zoning Board of Appeals. Following this meeting, the next steps are next week there will be an introduction to the Economic Development Commission. Again, there will be no action taken by the EDC, the Economic Development Commission, that night. It's another opportunity for the EDC to learn more about the project concepts that have been shared here tonight and been made available online. It's also another venue for residents to provide public comment, and we'll continue to have that online portal for feedback open throughout this process for folks to submit questions or concerns or comments about the project. Then the next night in the same room will be that third open house that was referenced earlier from 6 to 8 p.m. To collect additional information. It'll be the same format that we held this past week. And then the next meeting after that will be the February 19th, the Development Review Board pre-filing conference. At that time, the Development Review Board is not taking any substantive votes on to recommend denial or approval of the project. That is just for another opportunity for the development to be introduced. And at that time, the developer would be able to make a request to waive certain requirements from the process, but the developer will not be requesting any waivers from that application process. So that after that meeting, the developer will get to work on that substantive plan development application that will include a lot of those studies and other information and more detailed plans that I referenced. After that is all completed is when the hearings will be held for the Development Review Board, and that will be the recommending body to the Village Board. Let's see if I got all my points here. And then, Trustee?
Matt, could you go back to last spring and what the efforts we made last spring, or you and Jessica made last spring, in terms of engagement with the community? and give for those who didn't know what happened and what went on. I think that's an important part part of the equation.
Sure. So over the last, I guess this would be fall 2024 into 2025, we had a series of conversations with residents, hosted in primarily in residents' homes, to get a sense of what residents wanted to see in economic development. And we've worked with a communications firm to have those conversations. They were very productive and helpful. And we've made that report available online after introducing it to the Village Board back in January of 2025. And that feedback was shared with developers and with JLL as they went to the market to attract potential builders and buyers for the site. And that was incorporated into the design. I think they're throughout some of that comments on how that was incorporated, and we'll continue to incorporate the feedback and a lot of great questions at the open houses and online that we can kind of tweak with the design to help mitigate some of those potential adverse impacts. Are there any other questions? Okay. Well, now I'll hand it over to, or the board will hand it over to 531 Partners.
Clean water.
Thanks.
I'm fine, thank you.
Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Viktor Yakovlevich, and I will be representing 531 Partners, LLC, regarding this potential development at 7620 West Madison. Just to be fully transparent, I do reside in River Forest for the 28 years now. My kids have grown up here, and I'm a resident. I have absolutely no connections or any relationship with any of these trustees, the president, or anyone associated with River Forest, including their consultants. I have worked in the past with JLL on numerous projects, especially the last one that we completed in the city of Chicago. I am mostly a Chicago developer, have been around for 28 years, built most of the portfolios in the West Loop, started with a 3-flat and went up to 120 units. This project was brought to us by JLL as one of the 7 applicants to introduce the proposal to River Forest. I love River Forest. I thought it was a great site, but ultimately it has to work economically for the village of River Forest, for us as an investors. Going back to some of the questions, who is 531 Partners LLC? Myself and Chuck Westfalt. There's no investors. There's no presidents, vice presidents, secretaries. It's me and him and a couple of other people in the office. We're the investors. We do not raise money from anyone else. We invest fully into our own projects. I have done the first 15 years of my career only developed for myself, starting with a 3-flat, as I said earlier. After 2008 crash of the real estate market, and this is just to inform the trustees who we are in front of the public, so everyone understands, and this is on the record as well. I partner up with Michigan Avenue Real Estate Group, Jerry Ransdorf and the group. I've developed over 28 properties for that investment group, but they were an investment group. I was a builder. To make it clear, I built the project across the street. I do not own it. I never owned it. I just built it. In 2020, my relationship with Chuck Westfall went way behind that in the past. He's a real estate investor. We were always staying in touch. I'm a real estate builder. And in 2020, I decided to do this, but only do it either for myself or with one other partner. And I made it very clear, I am not for hire. I will not do. We do not bid any other jobs. We design, we build, and we manage our own properties. 531 Partners was created in 2020. And our first project was at 7600 North Avenue, which is St. Paul Federal Bank. We converted that to a residential building with some commercial. We were successful. We also owned the land next to it and the land next to Oak Park and North Avenue. We acquired another property at on Wayne Street in Chicago, Irving Park and Clark. Through JLL, we were one of the chosen bidders on that property. We acquired it, we financed it, we built it, 31 units, and we're managing it. It's rental and it's completed. And I believe, again, to be extremely transparent, every single trustee walked through our properties. They did vent us with all the other seven bidders on this project. We submitted the same application, we submitted the same drawings, and we went through the venting process in front of this board. And again, very transparent. That's how the process went. We're here today to submit our application. We believe it's a viable product. We believe it's a product that River Forest needs. And we're constantly working at it to make it better. To take your comments, to take the trustees' comments, the board, the traffic engineers, sewer and water retentions, school impact, all of those studies will be completed and done accordingly to do process. Whatever the River Forest asks for us that we can provide, we will provide within that process. Now, I'm just going to present the project at 7620 Madison. This is a five-story, 72 residential units for rent. Various square feet of the units. There are 18 units per floor. Talked about this. Oh, I'm sorry. One thing that I missed. V3 Development Group is a development company. My GC, I own it. Stark Chicago is a holding company, real estate company, that Mr. Charles Westfall owns in his portfolio, as investors have always done that. When you combine these two, you get 531 Partners that holds the entities that we built together and manage together, which is basically the chart that you see here. Current projects, 3951 North Wayne, completed 2 months ago. Four-story, 31 units, three and four bedrooms, 1,900 square feet to 2,400 square feet. Location. These are actual pictures, exterior and interior. That's our lobby to the left, all balconies, living area, bathrooms. 6700 North Avenue. This is St. Paul Federal, four stories, 42 units, mixed use, two and three bedrooms, between 1400 and 1800 square feet, with about, I would say, I think about 80,000 square feet of commercial ground floor and basement. Oops. Front elevations, sidewalks, kitchen. This was a repurposed building. Rooftop deck, bar, grilling area, sitting area. We provide all of our furniture. We provide it for all the residents. Dog run, lit dog run on top of the roof. Future projects. 117 Virginia, Elmhurst. Five-story, 40-unit building. Similar to what we're proposing in River Forest. All ground floor parking. This is a landlocked, basically no alleys. There's only Virginia, one street in the front, and York Road to the east. Front elevation, rooftop, kind of the same thing what we're proposing for this particular project to create a community. Visual view. 1604 North Normandy, that's next to 6700 North Avenue. Four story, 59 units on two sides. So they're basically one podium and two towers, as you can see at that project. That zoning was B23 in Chicago. This is a Chicago product. 7620 Madison, property that we're proposing here today. Five-story, 72 units, mixed-use, ground floor retail space, and that's about 3,200 square feet. One and three bedrooms. That's a misprint because we adjusted some of the stuff. Anywhere from 620 square feet to about 1,900 square feet. And I will go through how many per floor. Project that you have all seen at our last two presentations, Thursday and Saturday. Retail space on the bottom, five story, 72 feet in height, 18 units per floor. Balconies on the south side, balconies on the west side, and balconies on the north side. We are working on the north elevation, and we should have that shortly. Rooftop deck, dog run, ground floor plates with all the parking, 87 parking spaces, 15 parking spaces as guest parking, 72 parking spaces dedicated, designated to each unit, and option for lifts internally within that space. The setbacks from the northern residents, the two northern residents, we have a 10-foot setback to the fence. We have a 30-foot setback for more parking and landscaping. We have an 18-foot alley, and then we have a 6-foot to a more building. So we're almost 70 feet away from the next residence to the north. The building is lot line on Madison and lot line on Ashland, which is a commercial zoning. This is a typical floor plan. We made a little bit of adjustments to that, which consists of, right now, of four one-bedrooms and three three-bedrooms per floor, and the rest are all two-bedrooms. So basically, we have 16 one-bedroom dwellings between 600 and 1,200 square feet, 44 two-bedroom dwellings between 1,200 and 1,300 square feet, and 12 three-bedrooms between 15 and 1,900 square feet. These are architectural elevations and heights. And this would basically conclude our presentation. I'm here to address any questions from the trustees on either ownership side, development side, or any other questions that you may have.
it's the unit count. I mean, I know we talked, it's fluid and I understand that, but what made you consider taking away the four bedrooms?
We took away the four bedrooms for now. Again, this is still a concept because the market that we have with four bedrooms and three bedrooms in the last project, kind of everybody wants really comfortable three bedrooms. We can do the four bedrooms. We can increase our floor plate, but everybody's looking for living space. And to achieve the living space, which is the front area, and to achieve also the right size of bedrooms, mm-hmm. we believe, and the right laundry room side by side, not stackable, with the right size kitchen and the right balconies in the front, which is the outdoor space that everybody seeks. We, at this time, that doesn't mean we might not evolve into something else, believe that the large three bedrooms would be really accepted in the community and for this type of product.
Victor, talk, if you will, just for a minute on condos versus apartments in today's market, please.
Absolutely. If you're talking about a 40-unit building, 50-unit building, 70-unit building, it really doesn't matter as a condo or rentals. Condos are extremely hard to finance. We're individual investors. We invest our own money. We have financing through 20, 30, 40 years with chalk of investments with banks. So we fund our projects basically ourselves. Condos, if you commit to selling them, markets can change, as we noticed that in 08 and 010. Interest rates go up. You lose buyers. Buyers can get qualified. You can sell 30% of them, 40% of them, 50% of them. But then what do you do with a fractured condo, as I dealt with since 2008 and currently today still dealing with some of those holdings that we had? So we're not a condo builder. And we are basically straightforward. We are a high-end rental residential holders. We just don't believe in the condo market. It works. It works for a 6-flat, 8-flat, 10-flat, maybe a 20-unit development custom. It might work. But when you get into these sizes of structures that we built, it's very, very difficult to finance and to get a loan, basically, for them. It's extremely risky.
Victor, you spoke about parking and having, I think you said, 87 spaces available and the opportunity to potentially put in lifts into some of those spaces. So then I think it would be two parking spaces and one slot, right? What would be, because these are rental units that you're looking to develop, what would be your determination in figuring out how many of those spaces get lifts? Is that dependent on the person who moves in there? And then how are you charging for that, basically? And then I don't know exactly how it works, but would, once that one person leaves, is that lift there then kind of forever? So would you be able to put those, like, I'm asking a lot of questions at once, but like for all 87 of those, would you, you know, would you have space, not that you would, but would you have space to put lifts in every single one of those spaces? I'm just looking to see how that works a little bit.
No problem. We only have 54 inside. So we can put 54 parking. We have 54 dedicated parking spaces within the building itself, which is all on the ground floor next to the commercial space, and two lobbies, two elevators. We have designed the building with a 15-foot height first floor in order to accommodate, after our mechanicals, that we can provide lifts for mostly all of them, but I would say at least probably 80% of them, we can have additional parking, and they have great products right now. They're very simple to use. It's four posts, and they work really well. And according to the charging stations that we'll be providing and for the electric vehicles. So we can increase that parking by, I would say, realistically, maybe 40 parking spaces within the first floor, ground floor area additionally. Exterior parking spaces, obviously, they're just one-to-one.
Victor, are all of those 54 inside or the 87 inside spaces for residents, or were you considering those for commercial?
All of them for the residents. We're considering taking the leftover, I think, 15 parking spaces there for commercial and guest parking and splitting them. One, right now we have them set to be on the east parking side on the exterior, and we want to split them, push, you know, half of them to the west and half of them to the east. That way the commercial spaces have use for them a lot closer, whoever that tenant is, which they can use it daily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Victor, can you talk a little bit about why you think this is a good fit for River Forest, why you think you can get the rents that were discussed at the meetings, and kind of why you think that like this would work here?
Absolutely. Number one, as I said earlier, I believe in River Forest. I think we do not have developments. We don't have any new developments to offer to anyone of any kind, of any square feet, as a new product to River Forest, to attract younger people, to attract older people, to attract retirees and people that want to remain in River Forest and live here 6 months of the year. We don't have that product. I think it's viable. I think it's workable. And I think it's needed of some kind, anywhere, even if it's not us, if somebody else or some other location. Eventually, developments do happen, and we need it in order to grow as a village and to grow as society. And I think demand for it, especially the way it's designed with different square feet and different opportunities for different ages and different sizes, I think it fits all.
How long do you think it would take you to build this project?
We're looking at right now between, I would say, 16, 17 to 20 months. It depends how we decide on the structure and how we built our schedule for that and when we start. We have to have a start date and ending date, and all of our projects need to end February to be 100% complete February, March for the rental season, which is the first season of the year. Mm-hmm. Super Bowl, basically.
So if I can ask along the same lines as Trustee Kiskatello, about rentals versus and especially your experience in rentals. And I hear the need. In fact, if you look at the last census of River Forest, there's not a lot of rentals in River Forest. And I do think there's a pent-up demand for that. But in your experience, since you are a developer of rentals, you obviously are developing several very good ones. I mean, give us your idea of how quickly rentals like that, you know, were occupied once, you know, the development was finished.
On our current portfolio, we're about 97-98% occupied even throughout this winter. And I'm talking about the whole portfolio between my properties, our properties, and Chuck's properties. All of our other projects have been absorbed within the first rental season. We were delayed almost a year at 6700 North Avenue from ComEd alone because they couldn't get the gears, the boxes. We completed the whole building, but we couldn't have power to get our fire and to get us the occupancy. Once ComEd completed and we passed our fire inspections, we absorbed that project within 90 days. At our Wayne property, which we just completed, which is a high end, and our rentals are anywhere from $62 to $9,200, depends on which floors. We opened that up in like November, Chuck. In November, we have five leases already. We have four, I think this weekend, five or six. We have five people by this weekend they're going to be living in there. And now we have tremendous amount of flow and which is everything starts after the Super Bowl. That's why we kind of use that date to absorb that market. In that market, we don't have kind of competition because we're the only one with a new product with the sizes that we have. There's none basically in that area. So we feel very strongly, and all the data basically tells us that the rental market is needed. It's strong. The younger people, they don't want ownership. They want to have the ability to move in a year or two, change jobs, change cities. And a good product is always welcome in any community. And that's what we're trying to achieve here.
Right. I agree.
Victor, can you speak about some of the like design elements that you have incorporated into the current vision, taking into account the area, which you have Madison, which is highly commercial, and then you have Ashland, which is residential? Because you spoke of how you have two lobbies, and I believe based on our conversation that you have them for a reason.
Yes. Absolutely. Starting from the exterior, this is a fully masonry building, which means masonry is around all four sides, 8-inch block, 4-inch brick. We have a fire suppression system. Our floors are inch and a half toppings, soundproof, decking, 21-inch trusses, double drywall on the ceiling, and cellulose blown insulation for sound transfer. All the demising walls are in 8-inch block, demising basically every single unit. The property has two lobbies. One lobby is on the south side, which is the east side on Madison. Staircase, elevator, and that goes up to the roof. And that's a service elevator, basically for move-ins, move-outs. The main lobby is on Ashland. That's our main lobby with the mail, storage, bathroom, another elevator, another staircase that services the west side of the building. They both tie in through every floor, has a garbage chute in the middle, trash chute that goes all the way from the roof all the way down. It contains, we have compressors, garbage, so we contain all of our garbage. We have hydraulic compressors. We pull our all cans into the alley, get service, goes right back in the building. People moving in, moving out, they pull up, they unload in the garage, that goes to the service elevator, and obviously all the furniture goes up, gets down, and goes out. I mean, another thing is there's a lot more things that we would have to work out on loading berth, which we have interior, drop off for the Amazon and all the other stuff, but those are all mechanics. The building is fully masonry, as I said, with the non-combustible balconies to all three sides, which is north, south, and west, porcelain, tile, and concrete topping on the balconies. All private rooms or private balconies, they're all facing living room with the huge European sliding doors for your exterior space. The roof interior amenities feature, as I said, entry lobby with elevator access, mailboxes and package rooms, spacious roof decks with grill area, 5,558 square feet, dog run located on the roof, about 1,100 square feet. Fitness room, we're still exploring location, kind of figuring that out. All residence units to have a private deck, trash chute at each floor, indoor bicycle storage, spacious units which include modern energy efficient appliances and HVAC systems. Building will exceed minimum requirement for thermal insulation. A silver roof will be installed. All paints used to be no VOC for better air quality. Buildings will be nicely lit at night for accents and security. Building to be fully sprinkled. So all of our lobbies are obviously all the common areas, all the units. It's a fully sprinkled building and great finishes from bathrooms to kitchens and.
Victor, I was going to ask, can you talk a little more about the finishes that you're contemplating for this project?
Absolutely. Number one, our ceilings are probably, yeah. Previously, you saw this, which is 6700 North Avenue and Wayne, which is basically this project with these finishes. River Forest will have a hybrid in between. Great kitchen, great tops, bathrooms. The doors are going to be different. The package, the crown package is going to be different. The lobbies are going to be very comparable. Technology is going to be there as well. We don't know if we're going to use mechanical shades, but we're going to, you know, see. But it's going to be very similar between this and the other project.
What makes you...
go ahead, Katie. You mentioned building should take 16 to 20 months. This is, might be an indelicate question. When do we start getting property taxes? At right when it's finished, regardless of how quickly the rentals come to you?
Village receives property taxes the moment we get the deed. As soon as we close on the property, the village will receive land tax at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Once the property is completed and occupied and a certificate of occupancy is issued, then the assessor will assign. Obviously, it will assess the building and payments will be made immediately.
Okay. At the time that you get a certificate of occupancy.
Correct.
Got it.
Remembering we pay in arrears. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be a little bit behind on it. So,
yeah.
So tonight, I know you've heard through the open house and even in some suggestions this evening about traffic issues, and I know it's been brought up. And I'd love, Angie, if I could do traffic lights or cameras. That would be awesome. But unfortunately, the law doesn't allow us. It doesn't make it safer, but we get a couple bucks. But it unfortunately, we cannot do that. But the idea of, you know, all these concepts of speed bumps and cul-de-sacs, and I know much of that is in our comprehensive plan. Much of it we've discussed as a, you know, as a trustee, as a group, and some we've implemented, some we've kind of talked ourselves out of. So as you look, I mean, this is obviously a very important topic for our community. As you know, you live here. And so, although I know you can't answer this question like outright, but this is something that we'd really like you to think about as you really start developing your you know, the product itself is how is the cars going to flow, where the car is going to go. And obviously you're going to get an independent traffic advisor to help you think that through, but this is an important issue, of course, for us.
Absolutely. And it's just as important to the people that are going to be living there. And right. We will hire and all the professionals that basically do that. We build buildings. We try to do the best we can, but we will engage all the professionals from the mechanical to traffic study to school impact. We will have all that data presented to the board.
And I think maybe I'm wrong here, Susan, you live closest over there, but I think we would want to see all of it. I mean, do you cul-de-sac it? Do you, you know, do you not do that? Do you move the traffic? Do you have a one-way? Do you have, you know, those are all ideas that I think we need to really think through. And it's just not you, it's us too, as a community have to think through the flow of how that traffic will go. And then things that go on Madison Street, you know, it's going to, obviously Madison's got a you know, more restrictive, you know, they're not two lanes. You got the medium, yeah. So you got a lot of things going on Madison Street. So anyway, it's just something.
I think consultant will work with the village and everybody that's associated here from your professional side to come up with whatever the best solution is, or just to give us information.
Yeah, and I think that's where the residents come in big time on a lot of things, but since that is a major issue and it can affect the quality of life. So something we should pay particular attention to.
And I'd like us to make sure that whoever's conducting the traffic study has the feedback from the residents before they do that so that they can really address those concerns.
And I think when it comes to traffic, you are right to say that that's part of the village and the village staff, getting that information from the residents, being able to share that with developers, traffic study folks, so that they have all the information they need. You know, we're talking about the residents who are right there, but also I've heard from residents who say, these streets are some of the major streets that go across River Forest all the way. We don't have many streets that do that around this particular parcel. And so is a cul-de-sac the right thing to do in that case? I think we want to make sure that we have experts looking at that, primarily for the safety of the folks in this area, but also where does traffic get pushed to? And how do we mitigate that and help other folks who are at those borders?
And again, I think we have a good base from our village-wide traffic study. So we can start, you know, that's kind of a good ground level that this can be built off of.
Yeah, between that, the comprehensive plan, all the studies, the independent studies. So
and we also have to look at the alley that's directly behind us that's going north.
Yep.
For their services, their garbage service, their plowing and everything else. How can that look like? You know, the entrance to that alley, exit, the exit to the north. Do we want to push traffic there? Do we not? Do we block it off? As somebody, one of the tenants brought up, like Elmwood Park has those gates for only the residents that would go in that alley. I mean, we can look at all of those options that make sense. And whatever makes sense, we're willing to study and make the best decision that services everyone.
Agreed.
And I'm assuming our chief of police, chief of the fire department will all look at that as
well. They'll sign off.
Yeah.
Correct. As part of the review of the application prior to the development review board, there will be a meeting with village staff, all the departments, public works, police, fire, administration, finance to go over how that affects village operations and public safety access is one of the primary items of interest for the village board. So that will be incorporated and those comments will be shared and changes made if needed before going to the development review board, and those comments will be part of that record as well.
Good. Thank you.
I do want to stress too, for this property, especially since they we have considerations for retail when we're looking at traffic. We are also taking a look at the, as someone mentioned tonight, the loading and unloading of delivery trucks and making sure that there are good places for them to be so they're not inhibiting any safety or street usage when we need it.
Along the lines of traffic flow, there was a robust discussion on Saturday about these concerns. I was sort of in that circle with you, Angie and Chuck, and there was a discussion about potentially putting a three-way stop at Ashland and Madison. Matt, you were involved in the discussion. How possible is that?
It's certainly worth a conversation with IDOT. Madison Street there is under IDOT jurisdiction. The challenge, well before our times, is how the streets line up there with or don't line up with the Forest Park side. The light coming from Jackson Boulevard tees with Madison Street. They're very close to Franklin and Ashland, so there's some challenges there from a traffic flow point of view, but I think that certainly will be one of the questions that we pose to the traffic engineers on how to, whether it's stop sign or raised crosswalk, other type of engineering aspects to help there.
Yeah, and you raised the other part of it was the crosswalk, because right now there is no crosswalk there, and I think part of that potential proposal should be a crosswalk. Yeah.
Correct. And I met with the village administrator of Forest Park last week to discuss some potential impacts, and they need to be a part of that conversation naturally because that would impact parking and flow on their side as well. So we'll continue those conversations.
Any further questions for Victor or Chuck or? Yeah, I know. All right. Well, I think we've had a good conversation. Thank you, Victor. Thank you, Chuck. Thank you, team, for being here.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that concludes our business for this evening. So if I can get a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay.
Yes.
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 Yes.